coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics, take two. This is issue 276. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the other host of this fine establishment. It's not an establishment. It's a podcast. The Jedi Cole Houston. Jedi Cole, you out there?
I am out here. I'm very out here.
You are so far out there. You're staying at a Drury Inn right now, from what I understand.
I am on one of my favorite streets.
The best street ever. Speaking of the best street ever, my favorite MILF is joining us tonight. taking no time out of his day, continuing to watch the Brady Bunch while he does a podcast. He's an amazing man with an amazing beard. Stephen Fett joins us tonight. Stephen, are you there?
I am here.
What is happening on Brady Bunch right now?
They're arguing, and Marsha has a big, giant bandage on her nose.
Nice, nice. That's a good episode. That's a good episode.
It is.
Speaking of good episodes, this is hopefully going
Puts
to
put her in
one.
Place.
Wow. Wow, Stephen. Cole, what are we talking about tonight? Let's stop that train.
Well, we should know this pretty well, because this is our second outing on this. This is Hey Kids Comics number 276. Size matters not.
Size matters not. This is all...
Story of my life.
This is all about Ant-Man and Wasp, right?
Yes, indeed. And the Ant-Man film franchise, and to a small degree, Ant-Man, the character.
That's correct, to a small degree. Cole, everybody sees what you in here. You don't even have to start.
Very small degree, quantum.
Quantum realm degree. I went back and looked, and we did talk about Ant-Man at some point in the past, I believe. If my notes serve as any kind of actual representation of what we've done on this show, which I can't promise that they have, I think we did talk a little bit about Ant-Man in the past. This was a debate that we were having as to whether we had done a show on Ant-Man or not, because we've done damn near 300 of these shows.
Yeah.
So I guess we start from the beginning here, and where did we last see Ant-Man before the beginning of this movie?
Well, we see Ant-Man not only at the end of the previous film, we becomes a springboard in a way, not necessarily the end of the film itself, but you get Ant-Man's entree into the Avengers at just the wrong time.
You know,
it's
I hadn't
like
thought of that.
Meeting a couple, and you really like both of them, and you're really getting to know them both and enjoy them, and then they're getting a divorce.
It's the Atlantis Morissette theorem. It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. I forgot. Steven's here. Okay, we're back in business now.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Tugboat Steven. Tugboat Steven, that's your new nickname.
That's right. Steven is the little tugboat that could.
It's the beard, is what it is. It's the beard. He looks like somebody that sits on the, what do you call the prow, I guess, the prow of the boat, whimsically smoking a pipe and just writing in a journal.
Yeah. And it's sort of like The Shining, because it's just handwritten.
Yeah.
And it just says, I'm the king of the world, I'm the king of the world, I'm the king of the world, I'm the king of the world.
Every once in a while, he just yells, Drury Twain. He's just marking Drury's for some reason. Nobody knows what he's doing. He's not supposed to be on a boat. Matter of fact, he's legally obligated not to be on boats anymore, but yet, there he is. Speaking of legally
obligated...
Oh,
I can't even swim.
I can't even swim.
It makes it really difficult when he's on the boat. He's supposed to be 200 feet away.
It does.
And it's out on the open water.
Well, technically, he only needs to be 200 feet away from seals.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So
hey, don't bring that up. That was 3 years ago.
And you got two more years. All right? Two more years. So you got a little bit to live it down. But speaking of legal obligations, we did, like you said, we found Ant-Man joining up with the Avengers at the worst possible time. fighting for what is legally, regardless of morally, legally the wrong side of things. As mentioned in Avengers Infinity Wars, being put on house arrest for how many years?
Was it
two?
Two years? I believe 2 years.
Two years. Which, by the way, for anyone, a two-year house arrest has to be maddening.
Oh, at the very least. I mean, oh, I like my house, but I like
on three.
It too.
I'm on three.
It's that seal.
It's that damn seal. That damn, who knew that they could file a restraining order? They're a seal. They have rights, Steve. But yeah, so
I know that now.
So he ends up on house arrest during, you know, during the two intervening years where we don't know where he is. He's on house arrest. Because he refuses to sign the Sokovia Accords, because he went and basically engaged in some illegal activity fighting Iron Man and that side of what is the Civil War, what they call the Civil War. We don't need no civil Guns N' Roses. thanks, Steve. That was a joke for exactly Steve.
Woo!
Woohoo! But yeah, so then he's brought in once again into the life. It's like, was it Godfather or was it Goodfellas?
Yeah, I think Godfather. Yeah, they keep bringing me, pulling me back.
Just when I thought I was out, they keep pulling me back in. But I think that this is a good time to discuss the dynamic of the movie. So, little insider pool, little behind the curtain talk. We recorded this once already. We lost it to the ages, but there's some things that we missed, and one of them was really talking about the family dynamic surrounding this part of the franchise, the Ant-Man franchise, more so than I think any other Marvel franchise involves the family dynamic. You've got
Though they tried to tack in a Hawkeye family dynamic, this one actually works, you know.
This one isn't 5 minutes of reshoots at a farm somewhere where, you know, Chris Evans gets to take his shirt off and hew logs. But yeah, no, Cole's got some hot takes for Hawkeye's family over here. It's like, this one works, Hawkeye. It's like, damn, back off of Jeremy Renner. The biggest complaint I've seen about this movie online right now, and they can take it and shove it up their ass, is that they really don't explore the dynamic between Janet Van Dyne and Hope Van Dyne hyphen Pym. I don't know which name she took.
I think she stuck with Van Dyne, you know, perhaps she, like in the comics, had a fashion empire to run herd on.
I'm really hoping that we explore that in Ant-Man 3 a little bit.
I do, too, because, I mean, the thing is, why else would you cast Michelle Pfeiffer?
Right.
or why not in that sort of situation? Michelle Pfeiffer has a history of improvisational trending apparel from Batman Returns.
Mm. I love the fact that Cole... The last sentence that you just said was something akin to Michelle Pfeiffer has a long history of trending apparel akin to Batman, related or tangentially tied to Batman Returns, but you delivered it with a Christopher Walken level clarity that was perfect. It was perfect. The sentence, the structure, and the way it was built just fit that perfectly. Thank you. That was a delight. That was a delight to listen to. I had to say something about it. But no, the biggest complaint is that we didn't explore that mother-daughter dynamic. But
I think of the context of the film, because one of the things that we talked about on the prior recording, and we will be, of course, talking about here, is the timing.
Right.
What's brilliant about this is not only do you have a sense of time, that time becomes an imperative in a sense.
Right.
And I said sense twice in the same sentence.
That's okay. So yeah, you have two different kind of ticking clocks. right? The ticking clock that becomes less relevant, I think, but more – it's interesting. Okay, so here's an intersectional interesting – I want to know how both of you feel about this, right? And I didn't think about this until today. So you have a ticking clock in the terms of Scott Lang has 3 days before his before his home arrest ankle bracelet is removed. So he gets sucked into this one last caper with 3 days left.
Yeah, that can undermine everything, yes. Even though it's for a greater cause. And
right.
That, you know, that plot element so much hinges upon, which was very awkwardly
stated. So we have a lot of what I'm now going to refer to as Ferris Bueller moments in the movie.
Okay.
Where he's, you know, running back. He's trying to beat, what was the principal's name? I can't remember the name of the principal's name, but he's trying to beat him back to the house, you know, so that he can climb back into bed and pretend that he's been there the whole time.
Oh, yeah, like in Ferris
Bueller. You know, he's got, the movie has three or four of those sequences built into it. But there's a bigger ticking clock, and that bigger ticking clock is, we find out, oh, by the way, if you haven't watched the movie, perhaps you should skip this one until you have, because we're going to spoil the shit out of it, so keep that in mind. The bigger ticking clock is they figure out where Janet Van Dyne is, and they have a finite amount of time to pull her out of the quantum, what do they call it,
Quantum realm, yeah, because it's they're skirting the microverse, basically.
Yeah, I know.
Because just to give a little bit of history, yes. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, I think it was Mego, basically licensed the molds and the actual action figures from some Japanese toys. And repurpose them under the name Micronauts. And Marvel was having some pretty good success with turning toy licenses for comics that helped support those toys into some damned good comic books in their own right. And the Micronauts was one of those times where they had Michael Golden as an artist who was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And so an interesting thing I would find out, because I followed a lot of these. My younger brother read Shogun Warriors, not a toy, but another licensed property was Godzilla at that time. And I think with the exception of G.I. Joe, Marvel wrote very shrewd licenses, and they got to keep whatever they created outside of the realm of the license itself. So all of the supporting cast that they brought in belong to Marvel to this day, including a character called Bug, who I was very hopeful we would see at the end of Ant-Man 2. And there's certainly the suggestion that, because Bug has gone on to appear in the Marvel Universe, I think he was even part of, oh gosh, I can't remember which group it was, but he was like a member. Guardians of the Galaxy. All right. Mm-hmm.
So there's precedent there, Cole. There's precedent for your,
That's true.
For your joy, yes.
But it's essentially, the quantum realm becomes what the microverse was.
Right.
To the point where, like, in the microverse, the planet where Baron Kar, or the world where Baron Karza held sway and the Micronauts challenged him and in rebellion, was shaped like a string of, you know, like a molecular string model.
Okay, like the double spheres helix.
Spheres and rods. And
yeah.
Only they were built over, so it was like this molecular Coruscant.
It's the name of my favorite synth pop band, by the way. The Molecular Coruscant. That's good. Cole, you're getting it tonight.
Yeah, I'm trying to make up for what we lost there, and there's new stuff.
There's new stuff. Yeah, don't overdo it. But we still got more show to do. I'm just saying.
We don't want Tugboat feeling left out.
So. We don't. We got to keep Tugboat. I mean, Tugboat seems to be, what's going on in Brady Bunch right now, Tugboat?
Sorry, over.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Now it's Mama's Family.
Oh, you're watching MeTV is what's happening over there.
There's a little glimpse behind the curtain, folks.
Can we call him Tugboat from now on? I feel like Tugboat's sure. A really good nickname for Stephen. I feel like as far as mascots go, Tugboat Steve is a pretty good one. But no, yes. So there
were Tuggy for short.
Tuggy. I feel like there
were. Steven's gonna so hate us.
Oh God, he's never gonna come back on this show ever. We're sorry, Steven. So,
it's all good.
So there are two competing countdown clocks happening at the same time, and as an audience, we are forced to choose which one is more important to us. Actually, there's a third one, if you want to consider the third one, which is getting the security contract and getting the cameras right for wherever the ex-cons were trying to get there to sell that contract to. I guess that's technically the third one.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there'd probably be four then, says Ghost.
Oh, she's on the clock in a big way.
Jeez.
Damn it, Tuggy.
I can't.
Was paying attention.
Yeah.
So the great thing. Go ahead, please. Just
you don't say much when you do it's to the point. And I salute you. Fans of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
That's right.
Exactly.
So the one thing that we've always said about the Ant-Man movies, we said it about the first one, and this one, it rings true as well, and all of those competing timetables speak to this, is, you know, we've got this fantastic world that they've built, right? We've got this, we got the quantum realm, and we've got, now we have two heroes that can shrink and grow in size, or, you know, we've got tethers to, you know, Easter egg characters like Goliath and, Egghead and all of these guys, but at the very core, these movies are classic heist films.
Yeah,
like 70s Steve McQueen style 80s heist movies, where, you know, you're on a timetable, you got to get the job done, you got to get in and out.
When everything has to mesh, and of course everything gets off kilter. And then manages to be drawn back together, and that's what makes those heist films
perfect.
So appealing.
Yeah, this makes them so much fun to watch. Oh man! So Steven, Tugboat.
Yeah,
you're not the comic fans that Cole and I are, obviously, right? You're a movie guy.
Yeah,
you're a movie guy.
I'm a movie. Yeah.
So what did you like this movie? What did you find appealing about it?
I loved it.
Okay, talk to me.
And like you said, the whole time thing, it really, you know, like, you don't want to get up to go to the restroom because you're like, you know, what's going to happen next? You know, like, everything's just like, you know, we got to keep going. We got to keep going with this. Boom, boom. There's no, you know, time wasting. And, I went with my dad to go see the movie, so he'll go to the restroom, and then right when he came back, he immediately asked,
Yeah.
And then when I went to the restroom, I came back and I was like, what did I miss? And then this woman behind me told me the entire thing, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, even her,
the
she was so really into the movie.
So you obviously didn't go to the same theater I went to.
We were really loud. We don't whisper like, hey, what happened? We're like, hey, what happened?
What? Wait.
Anybody? Anybody?
Cole, what?
Anybody?
What was your experience at the theater for this one?
Well, we like to go to the Alamo Draft House, which with its name, as you can well imagine, it got its start here in Texas and is now popping up in mm-hmm. several states outside of Texas mm-hmm. in recent years, which I think is wonderful. But what set them apart, they're one of those places where you can go and have a proper meal. You can get a glass of beer. I'm talking about not a paper cup. I'm talking about a glass of beer. But you can get like a full meal or appetizers and all kinds of stuff brought right to you. And and you can actually have a full meal while you're watching the show. And they have a strict, unforgiving, no talking, no texting policy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're rapidly getting into an age in this society where people don't give a rat's ass about anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, you know, that in itself is very appealing. Back before we now have four in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But we used to drive all the way down to Austin.
Yes. Matter of fact.
Like a three-hour drive.
My first trip? Was it my first trip or my
second
trip?
Yeah, I think it was. Maybe in your second trip down here.
We made a special. I went from Ohio to Dallas and Dallas to Austin to the original. I think it was the original. Was it the original? Alamo Draft House?
I think that one, we saw that at the one on Slaughter Lane, so I don't think that's okay. The original. The original was on Lamar.
Close enough that,
it was in Austin. And that's back when they were in Austin and San Antonio and maybe one other place.
Yeah, but we went all in about 18 hours one way to see the Avengers, the first Avengers movie. If you want to get technical, I did. So I'm guessing nobody talked at the Alamo Draft House.
No, and a couple of the other fun things that they do is, as you know, there's a 30-minute pre-show reel.
God, I want it.
Before a single trailer hits the screen. And they produce those in-house.
Yeah.
And they'll draw stuff together. Like, in this case, there were, like, some clips from Inch High Private Eye. There was some stuff on actual ants. There was, oh God, I can't remember the name of this movie, but I remember actually seeing it. It is boring as hell, where these insects become hyper intelligent and start undermining all of man's great works. I remember reading an article about how they trained a praying mantis to like chew this. They like coated these wires in sugar to make it look like it was the plastic coating it was chewing through.
Oh, in the movie itself?
Yeah, so it would look like the praying mantis was actually chewing into their wiring.
That's funny.
But, and, you know, they had, what was the one that's based on the H.G. Wells, The Empire of the Ants. There was a trailer for that. And it's just fun stuff. And then, in recent years, they've started doing these really cool, their chefs put together a menu for certain movies.
Yeah.
And they'll actually have, like, for Rogue One, they actually had this thing. It looked like the Death Star schematic, die cut in a circular pattern, and on the back was the actual menu. And they had, like, a little Groot mask for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I think it was, or maybe in Volume 1. And they'll also do, for a lot of movies, a company called Mondo, they'll have exclusive glassware.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, that's amazing. Like, we have nothing like that in Ohio. Like, it's
Ohio.
Hey,
for Ant-Man, we came into the theater and every single little table had this tiny little maybe 2-inch by 2-inch square card, like on cardstock on the table.
Yeah.
And one of those little cheap plastic magnifying glasses.
Yes, yeah, the little guy.
Okay,
It was the actual drinks menu. For Ant-Man.
Oh, God.
Printed on a tiny little card that you literally needed the magnifying glass to see what it said.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
They have a lot of fun with stuff there. So my experience, was very much, it enhances just the whole, just being there as part of all that. It's worth the extra money, more so than 3D glasses crap.
Right?
When's the last time you saw a movie in 3D?
Avatar?
I won't see them in 3D anymore. Like,
I only saw Avatar in 3D, and I think maybe Coraline, because we were with people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the more that people don't go, this is a soapbox. I'm going to go ahead and get on right now.
Let's do it.
How many movies in the last 5 to 10 years have you seen where you see an elevator going down the shaft? Think about it. Captain America Civil War, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom,
Ant-Man. This movie, yeah.
Yeah. That is the most tacked-on 3D thing. In Avengers, I think. No, it was in Captain America First Avenger. A lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. work
Oh, yeah.
It's true. A lot of flying at your face, right?
Yeah. But, no, that I think, you know, Alamo's doing God's work with cinema.
Yeah.
By enhancing experience. And, you know, this is, we're living in the age where the movie theater should have been extinct a decade ago.
Yeah.
According to people were imagining that just like video killed the radio star, people imagined that, you know, so many other means, and you got people falling in this, well, I'll just wait till it comes out on VHS, or I'll wait till it comes out on DVD, or I'll wait till it comes out on Blu-ray. That's the, over the years, that
it's
same.
It's continuing to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Saga.
Yeah, that's good. That's
well, like, now it's, I'll just wait until someone, you know, like, you know, pirate it, you know, on, you know, streaming on the internet. And a lot of people just don't, I don't know why, don't want to go to the theater.
Well, a lot of people, so here's the thing that I've, we are not talking about Ant-Man. We'll get back to Ant-Man, I promise. You know, I've had a lot of arguments. People,
we'll edit this out.
No, it's stay. The kid stays in the picture, Tugboat. The kid stays in the picture. No, a lot of people don't understand what the impact and the analogy, the stupid analogy of the you wouldn't download a car. Screw those guys. They don't. That's the worst marketing.
Yeah, that doesn't.
It doesn't translate. It's more akin to the slow down. My dad or mom works here. Signs for construction.
Yeah.
You know, that's what. That's the more. You know, analogous marketing, because people don't understand the impact that it has and who it impacts. You know, we're not. Yeah, you think it's a victimless crime because you are it because A, it's a movie you quote unquote wouldn't have watched anyway, and yet you're watching it. You know, and B, you know, well, they've already made their money at the box office, so what difference does it make if Paramount doesn't make, you know, whatever the retail minus cost is of a DVD that I buy or rent, right? Okay, I get that. But there's so many other people tied up in that margin, you know?
Oh, yeah, and the economics of the overall economics. I think that's what people are blind to. But I'm afraid I sent us off on a strange new path.
You did. But that's okay, because that's what this show is about. But I did want to talk about something we did not talk about last time we recorded this, which is, and I'm going through the roster of Marvel movies in my brain, right?
Yeah.
I'm flipping through the Rolodex. This is the first Marvel movie that I can think of that featured not one, but two. And I'm going to call them this because I believe this is true. Two strong female leads.
Oh, absolutely.
In the movie. And I don't think that's happened yet. I think this is the most inclusive Marvel movie that I've seen yet. And I think this is probably the only Marvel movie.
Oh, lead role.
What's that?
Leading roles?
Yeah, as in leading roles. As in.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that
part. Being kind of front and center.
Right.
Okay, because I was going to say Black Panther.
No, you got a point.
But I guess those would be supporting. Would they be supporting roles?
I think you're right. I think Black Panther would be the only other one I could consider, you know, in the same category. But, you know, Black Panther in this movie absolutely passed the Bechdel test, which, you know, is becoming increasingly more important and increasingly less about social justice and more about creating good movies, I think.
Yeah.
And between the Ghost and between which, again, casting the Ghost as a female character is a really cool turn, because in the comics, the Ghost was the most highly sought-after industrial espionage kind of spy character in the Marvel Universe. Worked for everybody. Anybody with a name. And you never found out a name or a race or a nationality. Didn't matter. The Ghost was going in to steal your shit and getting out. That's what was happening. But making it a woman was a very interesting twist. Having Hope be more front and center and be more, I don't want to say strong, but I'm going to say strong, than Paul Rudd. you know, in,
yeah,
in
I think she has a she becomes a very strong character. I mean, she's mired in her impending doom.
Well,
and
she did
carry
the
loss.
Paul Blood in the first movie.
No, yeah, she did.
Oh yeah.
So
I'm sorry, I got sidetracked and started talking about Ghost again.
No, please. Yeah, no, go back. I want to hear what you were saying. Mired in the loss, because that was a really interesting take.
Yeah, because she's mired in having lost her family, and she has the survivor's guilt. She has been effectively absconded by the government, and trained to be, you know, a tool for the ends of S.H.I.E.L.D., possibly advancing Hydra in the process.
I think absolutely advancing Hydra in the process. I think that that's absolutely something that happened. You're absolutely right. Not to mention the fact that the consistent and constant isolation coupled with what had to have been weird, you know, comic book hypnotherapy and suggestion, coupled with the sickness that she had from being in the quantum realm explosion, you know, she did a really good job of just always being one thread away.
Yeah.
She was a brilliant, she's a brilliant actress. She was in a show called The Killjoys on Sci-Fi that I absolutely loved. I thought that was a great show. But she portrays this character one thread away from just losing it and does a great job at it. Like I'm thrilled with that character and that characterization. But yeah, and then you also have as a supporting role, as what I would consider a supporting female lead, like you were talking about, in your best Christopher Walken, you've got Michelle Pfeiffer, and Michelle Pfeiffer comes out stronger than Hank Pym. So you've got this interesting on its head dynamic against what we consider the Marvel movies, which is, you know, Black Widow playing au pair to the Hulk. You know, the sun's going down, big guy. We need to, you know, that type of thing. Or Maria Hill playing second fiddle always to this kind of shadowy Nick Fury. We actually have female characters in charge. And you know what, Steven? You know, Tugboat, you're right. Black Panther did have a lot of that, too. You know, his sister, you know, the guard, everything. You're absolutely correct.
The sister, the girlfriend.
Right.
They had a whole, like, practically a trifecta of strong female leads there.
Yeah. You're absolutely correct. But I just think and Marvel has come out and said this, that the next couple years are going to be a year of women superheroes. With Captain Marvel, with Wasp, with all what's coming is going to be a real strong year. Black Widow's finally got a director apparently. So
thank goodness.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a cool ass movie. So I'm pretty well excited for what's coming. But let's get back to it and talk about not only the fact that this movie had a lot of female inclusion, it also had some Asian inclusion.
Yeah. Oh, real quick, I want to touch back on Ghost real quick because you brought something to my attention.
Movie.
A lot of these things just.
Sorry, what was that?
I love that part where she was trying to use the Potter's wheel, but she kept phasing through the clay. It was, it was both beautiful and tragic.
Oh, Cole, I love you. I love you, Cole.
So. You pointed out when we tried to record this the first time something I didn't catch, much like the character we're going to talk about next, and that is that her dad bears the name, and I love when they do this, they just use a name that the fanboys know, and like, okay, that's a good way to utilize that character, is that her dad is the character Egghead from Marvel.
Yes, supervillain scientist Egghead, Elias Starr. So what's really cool, and I know Cole and I both got super excited about Bill Foster being in it, but you have Hank Pym, Bill Foster, and Egghead all working on this quantum tunnel. I think basically, right? Like that was the or some way to access this quantum realm before it all fell apart. Before the project fell apart for was it S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time that they were working on it for, or was it somebody else?
I don't know that it was ever really said that it was S.H.I.E.L.D. It was more that S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of came in to mop up.
Mm, okay. Okay, I'm with that. Yeah,
it was the impression I got.
Yeah, because he said that. He came in after they heard about the explosion, and then that's when they find Ghost as a little girl.
Yeah,
going back and forth. You know, I guess through the quantum realm or a little bunch of shivers, I guess.
Yeah, I like that. The shivers.
She's got the shivers. She's got shivers. The vapors.
She got the vapors.
But what's really interesting about that is, canonically, in the comics, Elias Starr is, you know, Hank doesn't have a whole lot of what we would consider arch enemies, you know.
Yeah.
He's got one big one and then a few small ones. His big one, of course, is Ultron. And then he's got, you know, guys like Elias Starr, which you know, because his arch nemesis are always the ones that the smart ones. It's never like Abomination and the Hulk. It's always like a mathlete's nightmare when they meet. Yeah, so that was a really cool. You're right, Cole. That was a really, really cool nod. Bill Foster, the original Goliath, is another really cool nod. Like, they did a really good job in this movie with all the nods that they gave.
Threw a net over so much of the Marvel Universe and had this tremendous haul. And again, this is one of those opportunities where the Marvel Cinematic group understand that you can pepper these things with fanboy treats.
Mm-hmm.
And the average person can go in and enjoy Ant-Man and the Wasp as a damned fine film and not understand, not catch any of the jokes that are causing so many of us to catch our breath.
And not care, because
it doesn't matter. You don't lose anything for not knowing. Like, I didn't realize that was Egghead. But my enjoyment of the film was simply enhanced by finding out, as a fanboy, if I didn't give a damn about comics, it doesn't detract that, oh, that's Egghead from the Avengers. Who cares? It doesn't matter.
So here's the difference. Thank you, Cole. That's actually absolutely perfect. Here's the difference between what Ant-Man does and what Black Panther does and what Doctor Strange did and all of the movies that, versus a movie like Justice League or Batman v Superman, right?
Yes.
The difference is I go into Ant-Man.
Good acting.
Okay, yes. And no CGI outed mustaches, which just creeped me out. It just creeped me out. I can go into Ant-Man and watch it, right? I can go into Ant-Man with somebody who's never read a comic book and doesn't care. My polar opposite, if you know, the mirror-verse me can go into Ant-Man with me, and mirror-verse me will enjoy the hell out of Ant-Man. I go into Ant-Man and watch it, just like you were saying, and I not only get to see a good movie that I enjoy, I feel rewarded for 30 years of loving comic books. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I get the same movie, but I feel rewarded for the effort into the hobby that I love. From things like Elias Starr, from things like Bill Foster, from things like Cassie, which we haven't even talked about. Speaking of female damn leads, we haven't talked about Cassie Lang, you know, wanting to be his partner in that scene.
Well, and that was so wonderful because I don't know if we've ever talked at length about Ant-Man on the show. I know we talked about it on the our special with the Wonder Twin Powers Activate show. But, you know, Cassie starts out as a little girl in the comics when Scott Lang is introduced. And then she goes on to be one of those few comic characters who actually ages.
Yeah, yeah.
She grows into adulthood and becomes the character Stature.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that potential built in there, or at least we can, you know, Stature can now become part of the Ant-Man verse, as it were. But, you know, there's so many things that this movie brings you Egghead and Goliath and Wasp and the original Wasp. And I love the fact in the first film they acknowledged Hank Pym was Ant-Man.
Yes, yes.
And that Janet was the Wasp. It's like, holy crap. And naturally, who better to say, oh, well, you know, they were there all along as secret operatives.
Right.
Of course they were. Who could see them?
Well, not only that, but, you know, and it's sort of like I was talking about when we recorded before with what I feel like is going to happen in the next Avengers movie and then in Ant-Man 3, where why would we have ever seen them? What difference does it make? The only person who would know, there's only two people in the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, who might know this, and that's Tony Stark and Nick Fury.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Who else? Captain America wouldn't know. He was frozen. Why would he know? Why would anybody else know and or care that Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne were, you know, secret agents with these powers? Nobody would know. Nobody would care. So it's really cool that they were like, yeah, they've been there just doing it. You know? Like, I want Nick Fury to show up and just be like, oh, come on. Like, really? Like, damn it. He'll show up in the next movie or something and be like, you guys. Goddamn you guys again. All right. Because you have that brilliant...
You'd be like, you're still alive?
Well, you have that brilliant scene in the first Ant-Man movie where, again, a de-aged... I still think that Hank Pym de-aged the actor. Hit me with it. I'm sorry. The guy who plays Hank Pym. Michael Douglas. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Brain, for dredging that up. I just kept thinking... which one was it, Jewel of the Nile, or which one was he in?
Yeah.
Was it Jewel of the Nile?
Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just kept seeing his face and hearing that awful theme song to Romancing the Stone. Romancing the Stone! Like, I'm just like, I can't break the loop. It needs to be broken. But I still think that he looks creepy de-aged, but Michelle Pfeiffer looked amazing de-aged. Just astounding.
Yeah. And we hadn't even talked about that, the de-aging. Holy crap, they are bringing that into such laser-focused perfection over at Marvel Studios.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
The next one, I think, is supposed to be with Captain Marvel as Nick Fury being younger.
Yep. Pretty soon, you're just not going to – it's all going to be that, and then you get you do voiceover. And that's
right.
Well, that's, you know, when we start talking about like Robert Downey Jr. wanting to retire, you don't need Robert Downey Jr. in these movies. You need Iron Man.
Rhodey can take over.
Yeah, but you don't even need him on set.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, not anymore.
You just have a suit flying around and him drop in for 3 days in Pinewood and do voiceover, and you're done. Like, and you here's $50 million. Thank you for your voice, Robert Downey Jr.
Well, also, you're talking about Romancing the Stone.
Romancing the Stone. Yeah, what's up?
I couldn't help when I saw the tardigrades there in the micro.
That's, you know, what they're called. Thank you.
Yeah, which are actual animals, often known as water bears, in some species, that are literally animals you can only see in an electron microscope that exist all over the world and are almost indestructible.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't they the ones that can withstand nuclear blasts?
They can live in a nuclear environment. They can live in the vacuum of space. It's like almost nothing they can't do.
Yeah.
And when I saw them, I too was, you know, had that Romancing the Stone vibe going on in my brain. And I was like, look at those choppers.
Let's talk about, since we're on the water bears of, you know, let's talk about which is interesting that they would use that
as a
size scale, and the fact that Michelle Pfeiffer refers to them as cute.
Yes, cute but dangerous.
But they'll eat
you. The nice thing is that bringing the tardigrade, an actual animal, if you're aware of it. If you're not, I'm sure it must have seemed like, oh, there's some kind of weird fictional critters there. But by bringing in the tardigrade, they, like you're saying, it establishes a scale. You've reached the smallest that can be visualized, the smallest known life. and then going even smaller than that.
Right.
Or even the tardigrades are, damn!
Damn! Noob. No, you're absolutely right. But we talked about the quantum realm, otherwise known as the microverse, when we recorded last time. Yeah. And how, Steven, you were saying that, did you do any more research between then and now on your Forbidden City and the microverse?
No, I have not.
I need to go see that again in general. But now, yeah, Steven, tell everybody why you need to go see it again.
Well, supposedly what I read on, you know, right when the movie comes out, or when any movie that comes out, I read, you know, people's reviews and stuff like that, and things that I may have missed, and, you know, trying to understand, you know, more about the movie. Like, you guys freaked out with the whole Egghead thing. I'll go and look at things, and, you know, like, oh, he's a part of the, okay, that's cool. They threw that in there for them. And one thing I read was, if you, Ant-Man is in the quantum realm, they're supposedly in the background a little tiny city.
Really?
Or town, or
village?
Little town, or something.
A bird.
Which
perhaps.
Then, you know, the which they also brought up, you know, maybe that's how she lived, or, you know, how, you know,
exactly.
She lived in the world,
in a little city.
Or in that world so long.
Was
yeah.
It, was
well, yeah,
it incorporated?
There's so much evidence.
Say what?
Was it incorporated? Did you look close enough? Like, was
no,
it a municipality?
I
did they have... I'm just kidding, Tugboat. Cole, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But the thing about it is,
I'm kidding. I was like, what?
The city in the background makes sense because, you know, obviously she didn't go. She wasn't wearing her Holiday Inn complimentary robe underneath her wasp costume when she went super micro back in the day.
Right.
And as a lot of people have pointed out, we talked a bit about. There is the inclusion in a wonderful costume element is what appears to be the remains of one of her original wings now repurposed as a Andy, how did you put that?
I like some kind of messed up batleth, I think is what I said.
Yeah, the micro batleth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not only has she been existing in this realm all these decades, she's also been kicking some serious ass.
Right.
And maybe we'll find out about, you know, the nature of her quantum powers in the things.
Possibly she was a micronaut.
Damn you!
Possibly. Possibly, Cole, we not only get an Ant-Man 3, but we get the time that she spent in the Quantumverse.
Yeah.
In a micronaut-style movie. Possibly. So,
possibly.
So, I, you know, we're getting a little long in the tooth. We're coming up on the end, and I really want to know, you know, we haven't really touched on everything, but we don't need to. They have a movie for that. But what do you see this movie, how does it speak to influence and what's going to happen next based on what happened in this movie? Does anybody have any ideas?
Tuggy.
Well, I mean, at the end, you see that, you know, they get, you know, disappeared, snapped. They get snapped.
Sure.
By Thanos. And so that's how it ends. And, you know, Paul Rudd, or, you know, Ant-Man is stuck in the quantum realm. And as we talked about from the show before, are they going to let him just stay in there during the Infinity War movie? Is he going to be just in there while the rest of them are out there? I mean, I really don't see how he's going to be able to get back into the normal world. So, I mean, and then the third one, I really think, yeah, they're going to explore the quantum realm a lot more. And, you know, with him and, you know, maybe Hope coming along with him if she comes back.
Okay. Cole, what are your thoughts on him getting out of the quantum realm in time for Infinity Wars,
Endgame
or whatever it's called?
I think perhaps something, there's going to be some greater purpose to him having wound up there. And
right.
I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, that maybe there's this sort of inadvertent, you know, that's part of the end game itself. That's part of that one scenario that Doctor Strange saw.
I hadn't even thought of that. There's only one way this goes.
Yeah.
And Ant-Man has to be in the quantum realm for the first part of this. Damn it, Cole. That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just kind of the more I thought about it, the more I was seeing that there could be a greater purpose to this than just sort of. But the other thing is, like so many films, Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange, Thor. There are world-building films, and there are mythos-building films in this franchise. The Avengers is sort of what we're building toward. It's the picture on the box of Legos.
Right, right.
Or the picture on the puzzle, the box the puzzle came in. But films like Doctor Strange and Thor and Ant-Man do more than just
build. Black Panther.
Yeah.
But they're doing more than just building the mythos. They're building the world. They're expanding the world. Iron Man and Captain America allow you, okay, we can allow for superheroes. We can suspend our disbelief. We can let unlicensed law enforcement exist and run a roughshod over the world, frankly. Right.
Yeah.
But you can't. Until Avengers, Thor opens the door for Avengers because it suggests, it allows that there are realms parallel to Earth. So Thor, in many ways, is more important to Avengers, the very first one, than Captain America or Iron Man combined.
I would agree with that.
Because you need that gateway. Avengers opens the door to Guardians of the Galaxy, which expands your universe to outer space.
Yeah.
Not just inner space.
We know that Doctor Strange expands
dimensional
it.
Space. Doctor Strange brings magic into the realm. So what Ant-Man is doing, where the importance of Ant-Man comes, is you're now allowing for the microverse or the quantum realm. And the quantum realm opens doors for other characters as well. This is an empire builder. Yeah. And not many people realize its significance. And that's where I'm going to close.
Yeah.
Woo. Other than to say, what's up? I loved the Hot Wheels case.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Portable lab, Hot Wheels case, giant Energizer batteries. Like, I need to watch this movie.
Duracell.
Nice job, Tugboat. Good eye. I really need to go back and watch this again just to catch all those little, no pun intended, nods to the things that they shrunk or they grew or they made different. Like I said,
That's what she said.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about Jimmy Woo, but I'm thinking maybe what we'll do is I would love to do a whole show on Atlas Comics.
Oh, that would be fun. And also, we do have an upcoming issue. I don't know where it is between now and I believe we're now up to September of 2020 on the plotting queue called I Am Everyday People.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about some of the just regular folks
there
in
you
comics.
Go. Jimmy's one of those people, besides the fact that he got de-aged at some point, but it's comic books. That's fairly mundane at this point. No, I thought this movie was great, and I think when we talked last time, I think where this movie succeeds so wonderfully against, I said the easiest comparison was Doctor Strange, right? As a movie, because we're kind of comparing two. It's easy to see Asgard. We all have a kind of point of reference for an Asgard, whether it's a Mount Olympus or whatever it might be, paradise or Camelot, whatever you want to call it. Asgard is guys with swords and armor. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. But when we're comparing things like the dimensional travel of Doctor Strange, and then the linchpin of the Ant-Man universe, which is the quantum realm. You know, I think there's a very clear line to draw between those two movies. And my major bitch about Doctor Strange was, I don't need to know how you made the sausage. I just want to eat the damn sausage. So don't spend a half hour explaining how magic works. All you're doing at that point is giving me Common Core math homework. Like, I don't want it.
Well, effectively, you're taking the magic out of magic.
Yeah. Magic is just science we don't understand yet. Thanks, Tony. Guess what? We understand it now. It's not magic anymore. It's just dimensional travel. You've worked on an equation, but you haven't worked on it in an awesome science lab. You worked on it in a dank basement somewhere with a bunch of books chained to a chain link fence like a bunch of weirdos. Awesome. Club D&D weirdo working on science. But the difference is...
Damn, Andy.
he's got a lot of issues.
Something was balled up.
It made me so mad, Tugboat. You have no... I almost called you Steven, sorry. It made me so mad, Tugboat, when it happened. I called Cole, and I was like,
"Yeah,
I want to like this movie so much, but they took all of the joy out of it because of that."
And honestly, as a moviegoer, I feel you. I mean...
Yeah,
it's one of the movies. It seemed like it was just stretched out too long. Like they wanted to show too much. And like you said, it's pretty much like, you know, like a new Spider-Man movie. We have to talk about how his uncle died. We all know how his uncle died. It goes straight into the movie.
It's like, you know, if you're going to relaunch Superman or Batman, every man, woman, there are unborn children who know their origins.
Yeah, it's written into your DNA now.
Exactly. Yeah.
But where that movie failed for that, Ant-Man does it so much better. Have you had to sit through a half-hour lecture with what was the thing's name in Jurassic Park?
Oh, the
Indoraptor.
Oh, that one.
The Clippy. The little...
Oh, Mr. DNA?
Yeah, Mr. DNA. With Mr. DNA giving you a half-hour lecture about the quantum realm.
Mr. Quantum Physics!
Yeah, no. They're just like, this is something that happens when you get real damn small, you're probably going to die, so don't do it. Like, yeah. They said that like four times, right? That's it. We see it once in the first movie, or I guess kind of twice, but more once. He's like, oh shit, I'm in the quantum realm. I'm going to die. What's this thing? Oh, it makes me big. Boom. And he's up. Nobody was like, and he didn't hear a little voice in his head of Hank Pym, like, explaining the math of the quantum realm. Like,
right.
It just happened. And it's same with this.
It allows for that because you assume that Scott Lang is too stupid to understand it. So therefore, through the vehicle of Hank Pym, you don't have to be bothered with it because he's probably too dumb.
Thank you. I want to be considered that.
See,
dumb.
That's the problem is because Dr. Stephen Strange is a freaking walking genius.
That's just, who as knows opposed his to one classic, of those rolling geniuses.
Yeah, who knows his classic rock. The ancient one feels obliged to explain to him because he's a freaking brainiac.
And this has been Jedi Justifications. It's been
there
a
while. You go.
It's been
they're
I
not
going
to enjoy the damn film, so shut up. Let's wrap the sucker up.
I still don't buy
We're
it.
We're coming
but
to
right.
you from the.
No, how dare you? Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to play you off stage because we got a lot of work to do tonight, mister.
We do.
Yeah, you're coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. Be sure and check out my other shows on DallasOnAir.com. First and third Sundays of every month at the Rancor Pit live from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. And on the third Sunday of every month, preceded from 9:30 to 10:30 by Isle of Toys, Ooh. A-I-S-L-E, like an aisle in the store. Isle of Toys, the most recent edition, had my own wife, Mrs. Jedi Cole. Catherine was my guest, so be sure and check that out. Check out some of the past episodes of both shows. Eddie Medina will be back with me for more simple tricks and nonsense there. And where are we on the social stuff?
Oh, geez, at HK Comics Show, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Friendster, Napster, Ask Jeeves,
MySpace,
LinkedIn,
Trucker Rest Stop,
Pista, that's
right there, written down on the door,
CQ,
Some mush somewhere at Wright State University that I've installed us on. Yeah, you can find us at HK Comics Show on those fine social media.
We're even platforms. On the original The Facebook.
On The Facebook. Yes, on The Facebook. Steven, you got anything for us? Oh, I'm sorry, Tugboat.
No.
Do you have anything for us?
Sorry. You know who he was there for
I know. Me. No? All right.
Well Cole, if you need a guest, I may be available your next show on Sunday.
Oh, your intern.
It's a week from this coming Sunday.
All right. Steven.
All right, we gotta get out of here. We got more.
We love you. Thank you for joining us. We've got more show to record tonight. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Thank you to Steven Tugboat Fett. As always, an amazing pleasure. I hope Marcia gets her nose fixed. And join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics!